This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Over these last few talks, I seem to have put quite an emphasis on stillness and silence and presence, not the ones you get on your birthday, but being present, being here. And that's only possible when you learn to be still, when you learn to be silent in the mind, the incessant restlessness of the mind, when that's being restless, then your ability to just be here and just be alive to being here becomes more and more difficult, to the point where you completely lose it once you get caught by your thoughts and you follow them and the pictures and the desires and the aversions that come from the whole package. You don't know where you are. Well, you're in your fantasies, you're in your creations, you're not present. And it's only when you're present that you create the environment for change. When you can let go of all your habits and all of your distractions, can you wake up and be here? A surprising place to find, I think, a lot of the time. And a nice, lovely place to find, but very often that could be quite difficult. So, much easier to be lost in your thoughts and your fantasies, especially when you're on the cushion. You can go off into your desires and avoid yourself completely and entertain yourself free of charge. There's no ice creams brought to you or popcorn or anything like that, but you can indulge in your fantasies, whatever, so you're not... Well, this isn't Dharma practice, this is worldly practice. This is reinforcing your sense of self, your samsara, your karma, that once you create, will inevitably come and revisit you again sometime. So it's always about, this is fundamental to Dharma practice, is learning just to be present. And when you're present, then you get to see yourself and get to know yourself, observe yourself. Watch a different movie, if you like, rather than the one that you create with your habits. Watch the other one as just seeing this thing play itself out with an observing mind. And when you do that, you can get to see yourself, get to know yourself, get to wake up to yourself and see what you're doing to yourself, how you entrap yourself. And from that point there, from that place of observation and recognition, that then is the platform for you to, the springboard for you to then decide that you don't want that anymore, because you see it that it's something negative and something, well, you can see this is how you create your suffering. The more you observe, the more you wake up, the more you see, well, here you are, this is suffering. This is where I kick it all off. I reinforce it. And it may come back to me very quickly and very obvious. But if you don't, because you set something in motion, it will come back. It's just the law of karma, the law of action and reaction, of actions having consequences. It's just the law of the universe. That's it. And that's a fact. And it's for you to wake up to that fact and then begin to have an impact on it by not going there, not following your habits. Or if your habits, when they do come back, because that is a habit that's coming back from previous, it's not brand new. It's cyclical and it's coming back again. So you then begin to react to something that you put in place before. So you push it off again, you give it momentum, so it comes back again and again. So you just keep pushing it like this. That's how you create this thing that has no end, because you're giving it volition all the time by buying into it, by playing, by pushing it off again. So it works. And that has no end. It does have an end. And that's in your hands, if you're prepared to wake up to that and see it, and see how it works, see how the process works, and how you are the sole owner of that phenomenon. How the whole thing works. You are the owner of the whole of all of the machinery. You create the machinery and you put the fuel into the machinery, so the machine works like a car. You put petrol in the car, and when you put petrol in the car, it then gives you the ability to move off in the car. And if you don't put fuel, if you don't put petrol in the car, it doesn't go anywhere, however ready it may be, and however the potential of movement it has, until you do put petrol in the car, it's a useless thing. And so you have to see the car, you have to see your machinery, and you have to see the fuel that keeps the thing going. And when you see that what you're doing, what you're creating for yourself, you realize that the thing is there, but I must now stop fueling it. But that becomes possible, that realization, and you may have to realize it many, many, many times before you begin to act upon it. That you realise that then becomes where you can begin to engage with Dharma practice. There, when you're seeing your habits that you've got and the way that you create your samsaric world, there you see it, and now I don't want to play this anymore. I can see the dukkha that it's creating for myself, and therefore I want to stop fueling it. Yeah, that's where you can begin to engage, rather than just a sort of passive observer, which meditation can give you. It's not necessarily a great challenge to come and to just find a quiet environment and begin to find a bit of peace and quiet within yourself. I mean, many people can do that. It's something that many can do, but it's for us, it's only the beginning. What you're doing is that you're creating an environment, and it's when you begin to use the environment And that's when this so-called practice begins to action on it. You begin to change your stream of consciousness, your habits that's been in place all of your life, and ones that you continually feed, you keep fueling all the time. Now you're going to starve it of its fuel, so that it begins to lose its power, begins to run down, begins to slow down, begins to become less dominant, something that possesses you, that controls you, that owns you. You want to start to pull the plug on the fuel, and that's really where then this takes on a completely different perplexion to just learning to be still. Because actually, there's many people in this world who do meditate, and even Buddhists who actually learn to be still. You know, you can cultivate stillness, but there's no practice there. It's a nice place to be, of course it is, and it's a place where the more you cultivate it, the less karma you produce for yourself, and the more peace and tranquility you can have, which is fine. We'd all like that. But there's no change there. There's no practice. That's not Dharma practice. That's preliminary. But some regard that. Some only want that. And I do know from my experience of meeting people like that in the past, who were very great experts at doing that. And there was no pretense about what they were doing. They didn't fool themselves that they were practicing the Dharma. Their aspiration was a favourable rebirth. As doctrinally, if you read about these things, if you want to go to heaven when you die, that's probably the best avenue to go down to fulfil that desire, that you have a favourable rebirth. But of course, which is fine, but of course it's a bit short-sighted, because everything is impermanent. And that too will change. Then what comes after that? So that's, you know, when we talk about stillness and the silence, and it is, and being present, which is another way of expressing silence. Because silence isn't dead. You don't die. You don't fall asleep. You actually wake up. It's the opposite, and you become very alive to just being. But that's not it. That's taking you to the threshold. That's taking you to a place where you can now begin to address your habits and the things and the stuff that you've got yourself so entrenched with, that you can't extract yourself, and you just keep playing over and over and over, and fueling and perpetuating. It takes you to that place where change can then begin to take place. But change isn't a passive thing. Change doesn't take place on its own. It can, to a degree. Small things that are not really challenging for you, you can see little things and just sort of shrug them off. Oh, that's silly, I'm not doing that anymore. And you can just bat it away. That takes no... that's not a challenging experience. It's something that's quite doable without any sort of effort or any great commitment. You just see something and you say, oh, that's silly, I'm not doing. And then you can let it go. But we can all do that. Everyone can do that. For us, the real challenge is to, how do we go about dealing with these habits that are so ingrained, that so possess me, that I just seem to be continually feeling that I can't let go of. But I can see that I just can't do it by an act of will, and yet here I am playing out these desires and these aversions, living in these fears, living them through, but not clearly seeing them for what they are, but not being able to shake them off. This is where the practice really then begins to. How do you go about this thing called change? How do you engage with the process of change? What do I have to wake up to see how change actually takes place? Is it done through an act of will? Do you just stamp on something and say, I'm not going to do this anymore? Yes, you can do that. You can bring a great sense of willfulness to, like, you know, possibly something like giving up smoking, which a lot of us have done. A lot of us have smoked in the past and we decide to give it up. And that's, I think, by and large, is just, you know, realization that this is not good for you. That's not what we do these days. And I'm going to make a real effort when I have a desire for a cigarette. I'm just going to exert this effort, willfulness. No, I'm not going to do it. And you sort of stamp on it, and you can break a habit. I know many of us have done that. But Dharma practice isn't, you can't equate that to Dharma practice. I mean, these are sort of worldly habits that you can bring change to. But the Dharma is not the same thing. You can't equate the changes that you would like to bring to your life, the habits that you've got, the fears, all of the things that we're caught up with, that you can do these things by an act of will. You can, but that's not real change. All you're doing is suppressing something, pushing something away, maybe putting something else in its place. The way I describe it to myself, it's like moving the furniture around. You don't like the way the room is. It's been laid out. In fact, you just don't like it, and you really want to do something about it. So you rearrange the furniture because you don't like the way it looked. Now you want to rearrange it. But then when you come back in 6 months' time, or in 6 months' time, a year's time, you look at it, oh, I don't like that. You get fed up with that, so you want to move it again. So you move the furniture around again. And so you keep moving. You keep moving the objects that you're not are disagreeable. You just sort of keep shuffling them around, playing games, pushing them here, pushing them there, without really getting to the bottom, without really resolving the issue with what you really like to do. And if I can use this rather silly analogy, if you like, is actually ideally you just want to get rid of all of the furniture. And then when you get rid of it, you just get rid of it once and it's all gone. There's no more engaging with fiddling and playing with these things. It's gone. It's all gone forever. And you're free of something that's clearly disagreeable to you. So rather than move the furniture around, Dharma practice is actually about getting rid of the furniture. And this is one of the great challenges. It's not a good analogy, really. The great challenge of the Dharma is to get rid of, habits, get rid of things that you get self-identity around, things that populate your life, populate your personality, that helps to create this thing called personality and all the attachments that characterize it is to have a willingness to let things go, but not put anything in its place. This is where trust comes in. That you think that I must put something in place, otherwise it's a void. I'm dead. I've become a zombie. I'm becoming this empty nothingness person. I must put something in its place. Well, that's what you do in the world, and what you put in its place then becomes an agitation, and then you have to deal with that, and then you replace it with something else. Consequently, we're always going from one thing to the next, always wanting one thing. Get rid of that and get something else. And because whatever we grab a hold of that we think is going to satisfy us actually becomes unsatisfactory, and then it doesn't do the business, and so then we want to go on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and consequently we spend our life just chasing things and moving the furniture around. But with Dharma it has a totally different quality. It doesn't relate to that at all. Don't mix the two when you're dealing with your habits and the things that you begin to see that are having such an effect on your life. That don't view those things in the same way as that you view worldly things. You don't like the furniture in your room, so you go out and you buy yourself, throw that lot away and get another lot of furniture in. Replace the furniture with another lot of furniture. Replace your TV with another TV, your phone with another phone, and on we go, one thing after the other. Just keep swapping and changing until, and then we get fed up with that, and then we change it for another one, and on. Don't think Dharma's like that, changing Dharma. Dharma's about letting things go but not putting anything in its place. That's where trust comes in, that you think you're going to fall into a void, that as I say, you think you're going to become this empty, useless thing. And so this is why we don't let go of things. We can let go of things as long as we can put something else in its place. We do that all the time. But to let go of something, willingly let go of something, and then just leave that and learn to trust that actually that's okay to do that, that actually you're going to be okay. It's called going into the unknown. If you're going to replace something with something else, that's not going into the unknown, because you know what the known's going to be. You're going to get rid of this and you know what you're going to put in its place. There's no challenge in that. And we do that, but with Dharma it's about letting go and not intentionally going out there and say, oh yes, I'm going to let go of that habit, let go of that, but I'm going to put that in its place. That's not Dharma. Dharma is about letting go, a surrendering, of giving up habits, attachments, and not intentionally going to fill that space up. And see what that feels like. And that's the reason why so often we do not rise to the challenge of change, because you don't want to let go. You want to let go, but actually you don't want to let go at the same time. Because if you do let go, it frightens you. What's going to happen to me if I let go of this thing? I know it gives me a lot of pain and a lot of suffering, but at least I know it. And at least I'm still alive, and at least I can complain about it and fight it and hate it and wish it wasn't there and all the rest of it. But at least it's the known, and I feel you get a strange sense of security from it, even though you hate it. This is why we don't let go. We get so caught. Okay, I hate it, but at least I feel safe. I feel safe within it. Can I let it go? Can I let it go? and not put anything in its place. So I don't know, in other words. So what you're doing there is that you're stepping beyond the known. You're stepping into the unknown. It's called getting out of your comfort zone. Comfort zone doesn't necessarily mean something that's comfortable. Don't misunderstand that. It's what you know, and it's what you hold on to because you're frightened, and you're holding on to something. Even if it frightens you, you hold on to the fear because you know it. And that gives you a strange sense of security. Security means that you feel alive. You've got the sense of aliveness. So you hold on. Oh, I hate my life and I hate myself. And I hate all this, but I'm going to hold on to it. Because I don't know anything else. And if I let go, what's going to happen to me? If I can let go, if I know what I'm going to let go and replace it, that I can do that. I'm doing it all the time in my life, actually. You're doing it all the time, including with people, never mind objects. We're letting go and then we're holding on to. So we just... But this, the Dharma is different. You don't do that with the Dharma. You have to let go, and that letting go is not willful. Willfulness is always a sense of achievement that you want to get something. Ambition. If you're ambitious, then willfulness works. Willfulness will help you achieve your ambition. But that's all self. That's all self. That's just the self looking after itself. It's just reinforcing itself. It's giving it security. It's doing whatever. It's all self-driven. But here, this letting go, that challenges us. Once you learn to be still, once you learn to wake up to yourself, that's what the stillness will give you. It will take you to that platform, that area, a workspace, as I like to say, the dharmic environment, where you can begin to just, you see all of that there, and you see your attachments. And you see what creates dukkha for yourself and for others. You're not an island. Practically everything that you're caught with is somehow connected to others as well. So, you know, you can see those things there. And you say, well, I want change. I don't want that anymore. And the way you begin to engage with that. Is, you know, if you've got some habit, some way of reacting to somebody, to something, that the way that you're going to challenge that habit that you keep perpetuating is that when you come to that situation, and we don't go looking for things in this training, life will present you with your things to be working with. And if you're going to go around looking for things on purpose, that's just self again. Just relax and let life present itself to you. And then when it presents yourself with a situation that you see that you no longer want to feed this, like somebody, a particular situation, they say something to you, you have a way of defending yourself, a way of looking after yourself, habits, things that you say, the way that you can react to that, and the way what you say so that you manage to manipulate and look after yourself, basically. And it's the habit, and you know that you're looking after yourself, and what you're doing then is very often impacting on somebody else, is that now the challenge is, look, here we go again. This is, can I not do that? Can I just not follow that habit? Can I just not, put something else in its place. Be more skillful, be more kindly. Not say anything. Don't put these defensive barriers up. Can we do that? Because what that's doing then is then that's challenging you. You expose yourself. You open up. You let the barriers go. And you don't see anything that's going to protect you. You're not suddenly putting something else in its place. shifting your defense from here to here. Okay, you don't react in that way anymore, but now you react in this way. But it's just, you're still doing the same, you want to achieve the same end, but you just move things around. Or are you prepared to just open and not defend, not look after yourself, not keep that habit in place that you're beginning to see more and more is just a way of looking after yourself that actually you find is just very negative to you, maybe negative to others also. You're seeing that and you want to break it. And can you just not put something in the place of the defences of the old habit that you have? Can you just leave it alone and open? That's called getting out of your comfort zone. You're not looking after yourself. Can you do that? You can change the thing if you know what you're putting in place. That's more doable. But just that sense of vulnerability, that sense of just going into the unknown. And going into the unknown, actually, you're not doing anything. All you're doing is that you're not following a habit. You're leaving it alone. You're not fueling it. You're not perpetuating it. But making yourself vulnerable. If I don't do that, what's going to happen to me? Can I just open and stay with that and live with that? And live with that challenge, that sense of the defences that we all put up for ourselves. We spend our whole life raising barriers and then looking after them. If you see this more and more, the more still and quiet you are and the more you observe yourself and see yourself, you see you're just looking after number one, invariably looking after number one. By looking after number one, this is where you create your samsara. This is where you create your suffering. By always having to look after yourself, by keeping yourself protected from the world, from other people, from other situations, and always looking after this preciousness, this vulnerability that you always find, that you always experience. Always looking after this vulnerability. It's like looking after your life. But that very act of doing that is the creation of your samsara. And the more you see that, the more you realise that, you know, I really want change, I want dharmic change. I've got to just let go of all of these things that I've created for myself. And actually, when I look at them, it's just suffering. And I'm in a perpetual state of fear. Because the things that I erect around me are so vulnerable, they change. That security that I'm desperately looking for is very fragile. Is not guaranteed, and absolutely not guaranteed. I have to keep reinforcing it all the time, keep shoring myself up more and more. And see that whenever you enter those acts of looking after yourself. That's where you create suffering for yourself, because what you're creating is very unstable. It's changing all the time. You can't just put the thing up and then just leave it. It's something that has to be looked after, nurtured all the time. And we're in that state of agitation, of always somehow looking after me. Just see how you're just desperate to look after yourself. And how vulnerable the whole process is, and how unstable the whole thing is, and how it just absolutely can't be trusted what you do. So you're always, always on the go, always keeping the thing in place as much as you possibly can. That's what we're letting, that's your suffering, that's your samsara. It's self-driven, self-motivated. And that's what we have to learn to let go of. And when you learn to let go of that, you're not putting something else in its place, which is what you spent your life doing and what you do. Now you're not putting anything in its place, but you're learning just to open and get out of your comfort zone, get out of that place of step beyond your barrier. and have the courage, as you often need, the courage just to do it. And that's the challenge. And then to trust that actually you're going to be all right, that actually you're not going to be, I don't know what you think, you're just going to be destroyed by life, by others, by life, if I don't look after myself, to take that chance. This is why we find Dharma practice so difficult. Why should it be difficult? You see your habits, you see what is creating your dukkha. Well, then let it go. What's the problem? Let it go. But you can't, can you? We can't. One can't. We can see it, but we can't shake ourselves from it, even though it's almost like being masochistic. You know what you're going to be doing to yourself. There's a reason for that, you know. There is a reason for it. You know. Because, I mean, if it's all just simply down to intelligence, we would shake ourselves out of this in 2 minutes. Because it's nonsense. You see it. You can see how, what, not, and yet we can see it. And however intelligent you are and bright and sharp you are, you still can't shake yourself out of the habits. There's a reason for it. The way we all hold on all of the time, the way we hold on to this self-identity and looking after myself and feeding that so that I feel alive. And the dharmic way of transcending what we create for ourselves is on a daily basis learning to step out of our comfort zone, to take a chance, to take a deep breath and just experiment and see what happens. See what happens to you. Play with it. See what happens. If it's going to be the disaster that clearly some part of you think that it is, that you don't rise to the challenge of stepping out, you hold back. Because clearly something inside of you is desperately holding on to something. It's fearful that if you don't follow your habit, what's going to happen to you? What is it? And one of the greatest things, one of our greatest impediments there, that we don't experiment, that we don't willingly test an adventure. Adventure means you're going into the unknown. If you know where you're going, that's not an adventure. An adventure is you don't know what's around the next corner. And we don't go around the next corner. We want to know. We want to be self, and we want to be secure. And one of the greatest impediments to stop us experimenting is that we don't want to make a fool of ourselves. We stay in the known. We look after ourselves. Oh, I know this. This is what I do. This is how I react. These are my limitations. I'll stay within my limitations because I know I'm safe. So you don't step out of the, you don't step out of your bubble. You don't experiment. You're not prepared to make a fool of yourself. You're not prepared to make yourself vulnerable. That's all it is. And so you hold on to the stuff that you're familiar with, and you're growing ever more aware of that here's your samsara. This is why I'm suffering. This is what I want to get. This is why life is unsatisfactory. This is why life is never fulfilling. I'm never fulfilled. Sometimes things are a little bit okay, but I know that it's all going to change. You're not prepared to let go of any of that. You have to learn to step into the unknown. Be prepared be prepared to get it wrong. We don't like to get things wrong. We're not prepared to get things wrong. We're not prepared to admit that we've got it wrong. Made a wrong choice, a wrong judgment. So we hold on. to the known, even though we know it's not what we really want. To me, this is a practice. I talk about stillness, being present, spaciousness still. Yeah, absolutely. Crucial. But that's not going to bring you the real change. The real change is when you're prepared to to let go of your habits, to let go of whatever it is that gives you security, whatever it is that makes you feel safe, whatever the price is that you pay for that security, for that feeling safe, there, the willingness to stay with when something comes along that you have a way of dealing with. A habit, whatever it may be, a willingness to just stay with that thing, not run away from it, not manipulate it, not suppress it, not do something so that you shore yourself up from it in some way. Open yourself to it and stay with it. By not buying into that habit, you will almost certainly take yourself to an emotional reaction that, you know, there may be pictures and thoughts, by all means, but there's going to be a sense of vulnerability, and vulnerability is fear. Fear. We're really always talking about fear. But everything is grounded in fear. Everything we do is grounded in fear. That you'll come into that place of fear in some way. We can have all sorts of pictures, and you create all sorts of scenarios, and you project like crazy with these things, and you've got all this in the past, and you're projecting all the time, and you've got all of this, and you must look after yourself. That's what you've done all your life. That's the habits that we've taken on board. I must look after. How do I deal with this? How do I deal with this challenge, with something that I feel threatened by? is that you give in to that, and if you've got the habit of running away, then you run away because that's what you do. But the problem with that is it will come back again, and then you'll run away again. This is the karmic consequences of when you do something. There's consequences. Things don't go. You don't win. You just postpone things. You just push it to one side. Until it comes again. And then it again and again. And you look after yourself in the way that you've learned to look after yourself, the best way you can. A lot of the time you don't really look after yourself, but you suffer as little as you can. But then that's the law of the universe. You're engaging in the law of the universe. You can watch it in life. All the way you can see the whole law taking place, law of conditionality, of law of co-production, of when something is, things come to be, certain things happen. It's the way everything is moving along those lines all the time, and you're part of that. So when your conditions come together, you react in a certain way, so that the thing just perpetuates itself. It just keeps the whole thing moving, and you're never free. You never extract yourself from things. You become enslaved to it. But when you begin to bring presence to yourself, to your life, that silence and that stillness and that ability to observe, because through this whole stuff that completely, your complete experience of life, all of that, throughout all of that, there's a part of you that is absolutely not engaged with any of that. Even though you never see it, you never know it, it is completely alien to you, which it is for most people. There is a part of you that is not part of all of that creation, and it is a creation. There's a part of you that's not a part of that creation. never has been and never will be. But you will never discover it, you will never know it until you learn to be still, until you learn to let go of the things that cloud it over, your habits that cloud it over so that you lose it, so it's not there. That bit there, that's where your freedom is. That's where your release, your true release, your dharmic release is to be found in that place, if you like, in that part of you. It's within you, it's not out there, it's within you. But in order for that presence that we're beginning to touch on the cushion, that we're beginning to wake up to, beginning to get some sense of, the way that that's going to mature, the way that's going to become ever more clear to you, is that you've got to let go of your habits. Because if you don't, it will come to a degree and it will stop. It will stay. But the more you can let go and learn to trust it, and learn to trust that if I let go of something and I don't try to put something in place, I'm prepared to take that chance, the more that presence will come to you, because that's what will take its place. And it's taking its place because it's like something that's fallen away. It's a habit that you've, a blinding habit that you've created and that you have in place that falls away. And when it falls away and you don't replace it with another habit, there's another part of you that will shine through and take that space. And when that space is taken, there's more clarity that then can be carried forward to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So in time, these habits that we got fall away, and what's replaced, what in an absolute dharmic sense, what replaces those habits that you are so terrified that you hold on to, what fills the void, if you like, is your true nature, is who you really are. That's what fills it. And that's not a person. That's not a thing. It's not another aspect of me and my ego. Another thing that I'm creating, or another thing that's filling the space. That is something other than all of these things. This is who you really are. That place of freedom. That part of you that isn't caught. The bit that you so long to. You desire so much to be. To be a part of again, begins to break through, begins to, like the sun, another cloud vaporizes, falls away, and when the cloud goes, then the brightness is just that little bit more. But that brightness, that sun, that brightness is not you, it's not me, it's not the frightened me that desperately is holding on to itself. The bit that's desperately holding on to itself are the clouds. And you must, okay, I'll get rid of one cloud, but as long as I put another cloud in its place. Well, okay, you do that, but the sun isn't going to shine through, is it? You just exchange one object for another. And that's what we do in our life. That's what we do. We spend our whole life creating things. Let go of things, no problem. As long as I put another one in its place. And when I put that one in its place, then I want to go for another one and another. Because that one that I've now created and put up actually isn't actually really doing it for me. It's not giving me the happiness and the contentment that I thought that it would give me. So I'll go on to the next one, and the next one, the next one. And all you're doing is using that sort of metaphor to replace one cloud with another. But when you learn to practice the Dharma correctly, and you learn to let go, come out of your comfort zone, make yourself vulnerable, open yourself, bare yourself, surrender that attachment that you have, that thing that you desperately hold that gives you security, or you think gives you security, when you truly surrender and give that up, then you're giving one of your clouds up, and that which is behind the clouds can shine through. That's what takes its place. That's the dharmic change. So ultimately, it's who you really are shines through. But what it takes from you is the courage to is to let go, is to open yourself, that when these challenges come to you in your daily life, this sense of vulnerability, this sense that you're not in full control, control in the sense that you get a sense of a vulnerability there. Learn to stay with that. Learn to trust it. Go with it. That's a challenge. And it is a challenge, because if it wasn't a challenge, we'd have all cracked it a long time ago, wouldn't we? Fact is, we don't. We can't let go. We desperately hold on. Even though, like I say, you can see it's dukkha, and you know it's rubbish. It's no good for me. It's probably no good for other people as well. But I can't. I'm not letting go. I'm looking after myself. I'm looking after number one. That's the bottom line. And to hell with the consequences, actually, when push comes to shove. That's what we do. That's the world. And okay, there you go. That's what keeps the world going. That's what keeps the whole thing going and keeps you a part of it all. But if you want the change, you do want the change, but there's a price to pay. This isn't given to you on a plate. It's not given to you on your terms. You don't put the rules down. I'll give all this up, providing, I don't know, whatever your conditions may be. You've got no say in the conditions, I'm afraid. Your part in it is to learn to surrender. It's humility. It's learn to bow your head. We bow our heads when we come together. When you meditate, you bow your head. That's what you're doing. That's what you should be doing. Is reminding yourself, is to open yourself. And with humility, humility means you give something up and you don't ask for something in return. If you want something for what you give up, that's not humility. That's just trade. You're just trading. I'll give this up as long as I get that. And that's what you spend your life doing. But you can't do that with the Dharma. You can't do that with this training. That's the challenge of it, is to give up and not want things, and not ask for anything in return, and trust that. That is massively challenging to the self, because the self always wants something, because the self is desperately insecure. It wants something to help protect it. What do you mean, nothing in? Of course I want something in me. I want something in its place so that I can hide behind it, so I can feel okay, look after myself. To bow your head, we do it, you know, we don't do it for show and for entertainment. Well, you might do it for entertainment, or maybe you might do it just because you're expected to do it. But if you enter the spirit of it, if you know why we bow our head, why we put our heads on the ground, which is an absolute affront to most people's egos, will find that an absolute affront. That is an act of humility, an act of surrender, of giving up. Give it away. Give it to that part of you that is waiting to shine through. That aches to come and support you, and to aid you while you do these most incredibly difficult things. It's not easy. It is massively challenging. And will invariably evoke tremendous fear as you give up. What is that fear? What is it? It's because you feel vulnerable, don't you? You think you're going to die, or you think you're going to be possessed, or what is fear about? I mean, nobody's actually going to come and shoot you with a gun or knife you or something. The fear doesn't create those sorts of images. What is your fear? What is your fear creating? When you get that sense of fear, what are you frightened of? Do you ask yourself that? Why am I frightened? I mean, nobody's like I say, nobody's around the corner going to put their head around the corner with a gun and shoot you. It's not that sort of fear. Why are you frightened to let something go? Get to the bottom of that. Because it completely controls your life, doesn't it? It completely diminishes you. So you're this frightened little being desperately looking after itself. All the time looking after itself. So that, and then you turn around and wonder why life is unsatisfactory. Well, that's why it's unsatisfactory. Because if you didn't have all of those things, if you let all of those things go, by golly, life would be satisfactory. Life would be amazing. It would be wonderful. It would be this utopia that we, this heavenly, wonderful, all these images that we desperately create for ourselves. That's the fulfillment. You'll have all of those things. What you've got to do is just let go of this fear. Simple. But we can't, can we? We can't just dump it. That's the training. So that when we come to an aspect, like I often refer to the fears like a big brick wall, but it isn't one solid wall. It's a wall that's made of lots of little bricks, all sitting side by side and sitting on top of each other. Not one thing, but many, many things. And you can't deal with a solid brick wall. But what you can do is that you can deal with a wall that's got lots of little bricks. You can focus on one brick at a time. That's doable. It's like removing the brick because it's encasing you. You can deal with one brick. You can scrape the mortar out from around the brick and then push the brick out. That's doable. However difficult it may be, that's doable. That's not beyond the ability of anyone to get a grips with. You can do that, and then you can move to the next one, and the next one, the next one. You're not going to do it all in one go, but you can do one by one. They're all little aspects. They're all fear. Never mind the picture and the scenario that you create, that you're caught by, whether it's with yourself, your relationship with yourself or relationship with other people and life and work and family and relation, all of these things are all little bricks. But they're all pictures. But they all have the same essence. When you look deeply into them, it's all coming from that place of me. And what I need to do to make sure I'm okay. And you can see that what the essence of those things are, and you can begin to deal with them. When they come up in your life, don't go looking for things. When they come up in your life, you can deal with those little bricks. So it's doable. So that when you find this place of stillness, when you get this sense of presence, in other words, when you're awake and you're alive to whatever the situation is in front of you, I'm awake and I'm totally aware of what's going on here. I can see right through this situation and I can see, observe it like you're watching a film, and you can see the habits that you, the way that you're reacting and the way that the habit's about to come in, it's about to kick in, and you can see it coming. But because you have that presence, you have that stillness, you have the ability, you have that small, tiny little space between knowing it and reacting. There's a tiny little gap where you can say no. And if you don't say no, and you begin to say yes, you can't pull yourself back. You've gone too far. It carries you. And you see through your habits, you see it through whatever it may be, and you just play the game like you're some conditioned machine, because that's exactly what it is. This conditioned machine then kicks in and reacts in the habit that's been created and embedded, but there's a little gap. That's where your presence is, where your stillness, what you've managed to put together on the cushion, that's self-awareness, awareness, call it what you like, that part of you, that observing mind that you have, that maybe you've not had in the past, but now you have it because you're beginning to access it, you're beginning to bring it into your life, you begin to become familiar with it, you're beginning to recognize it, you're beginning to take it into your life, where you observe your life, your reactions, and you're coming to one of your familiar reactions to a situation, and you've got there's the recognition that it's coming. Without that presence, you won't have that recognition. But you have that moment, that little gap, tiny little gap. Don't quite know how big it is, but it's not big. It ain't there very long, I'll tell you that. Where you can say no, and then you can bear with it, stay with it. No, I'm not going there. Come on. You've got to say this. No, I'm not saying that. No, smile. You don't rise to the bait, because you know this is your habit, and this is what you just know, and you bear with it, and see how you get on. Maybe it's not a big deal, but it might be. It might be something quite difficult for you, and you get, and it evokes the emotions, and those emotions that has been so used to going down that path to fuel that particular reaction that's pending, that's waiting to. Come on, open the door. I want the emotion to come and so as you go to look after yourself, you shut the door. and to stay with it and say no, and to retain it. This is where it becomes physical, where we have our emotions. Our emotion reaction is completely tied into our habits, into things that we desperately hold on to. But once that wildness, once that energy is released, you're not going to stop it. It's like training the ox. This is what he's on this shrine for. Is that you have to learn to say no, hold on. They've got this immense power. We're in an environment full of horses. Far stronger, even though some of them don't look particularly inspiring from but nevertheless I bet you any one of those horses has far more strength than any of us who could ever muster. If you had a fight with one, or you tried to hold one, if it wanted to go, you'd have a hell of a job holding them, because it's immense power, and we got immense power, make no mistake. And once you release it, you're like a madman. You can't pull it back. But when you've got that little gap, you can go like this. No. Without having that, cultivating that presence, this is where it goes from part one to part two. Part one's lovely. It's not challenging at all. And you can find your heaven in that, and your bliss, and your rapture. You can do all that. That's what you want to do. But you've got that transition between there, you've got that tiny gap between that and your samsaric world that you've created. You've now got that little space where you can say no. And that's where your training goes. This is Dharma training. That's not Dharma training. Despite what some people might say. You don't have to be doing any training to do that. Just learn to put a few conditions in place, do a few exercises, and it's yours. This is of a different order altogether. You cross that line, you got that gap, and you say no. And it's like the horse there, that if you hold on to it, it's still, and you hold on, you've got more chance of holding it. If it starts running along, are you going to run along the side of it, put your hand on the reins and stop it? No, you're not. That's not going to happen. But at least when it's still, like it is now, this fellow out here now, you can't see it on the camera, but we're actually surrounded by a lot of horses. and sheep and various animals. There's a horse there now, nice and peacefully chewing on the grass. Now, you could go up to that and you could put your hand on the reins and just keep him there. That's doable, isn't it? Just, oh, and it wants to move. You go, no, no, there's a good chance you're going to pull it off. Once he starts moving, you're not going to do that. And it's exactly the same to yourself. And your gap, that gap there, this is where you make use of this, what I've been talking about so much recently. This is where you bring it into effect, is that you use it to see and say no, and to stay with the situation that you are about to react to, that you're about to run away from. Look after yourself, push away, run, I don't know, whatever it might be, run towards. Never mind, I'm not it's slightly bit interested in the picture or the scenario. That's where it becomes confusing. You're about to fall into a habit, a reactive habit, that if it has any meaning to you will have emotion as part of that experience. And once it rises up, you're just its victim. You'll have no control over it. But you can pull on it. You can say no. Stay with it when it comes up. Say no, stay with it. And then that will evoke. That can create all sorts of pictures and scenarios. So I say no, I'm staying with it. Open. It's not good, it's not bad, because your presence doesn't have an opinion. He doesn't think about good and bad, right and wrong. Absolutely not. It's just present. It's empty. Alive and clear. With so much wisdom within it, which is to be discovered. But it has a clarity. It has a clarity and it doesn't have opinions. So when you're holding on to your wildness, it's not good or bad. And the scenario, you don't have to play into the scenario and say, oh, this is good, this is bad. Never mind any of that. Just hold on and stay with, open up to the emotional impact that you will get from it. Don't run away from it. Stay with it. And if you stay with it long enough, this energy has a characteristic. It's a scientific fact. The energy has to do something. You can only restrain it for a certain while. It has to have an outlet somewhere or other, because it's alive and it's dynamic and it has a lot of power. And it's something's got to happen to it sooner or later. And if you can hold on to that and restrain the habit, that energy's got a habit of going down a particular channel that you've created for yourself in a particular situation. If you shut that off and you just stay with the energy, open up to the whole scenario, you're not suppressing anything. Absolutely not. In fact, you're living it to an extent that you probably never lived it before, because you've always changed the situation. Now you're staying with it. So this is not suppression. You're open to it, and it's desperately, but you're with your clarity of presence, of being here, of knowing what you're doing, why you're doing this, and say no to it without good and bad. We don't go down that road. Not interested in giving these things value and labeling these things. Stay with it. Sooner or later, it depends on the power and how much there is and the scenario, da-di-da. Sooner or later, that energy has got to do something. And if it can't express itself in the way that you've allowed it to express itself in the past, what will happen to it is it will revert back into its true condition before you actually polluted it. What you've done is that you've turned into a thing. Now you're not buying into that anymore. You're just staying with it and staying with it. However long it may be, it may be seconds, it may be minutes, it could be stuff that you carry around for days. That will eventually, it will revert back into its true condition before you came along and messed with it. And that's your true nature. That's the life force. The pure unpolluted life force within you. Your enlightened nature. It just reverts back and goes back into its it liberates itself. That's why this is such a physical training, that we deal with these emotional things. The mind and the body and the emotions, they're not separate things at all. One plays on the other, one relies on the other, one reacts to the other, because they're all one. They are literally one. Literally one. We split them off and we create duality and all the rest of it. And it's all one. And that's that's discovering that Dharma practice, that it isn't a worldly practice, that it isn't about manipulating. It's about learning to stay with things, learning to open, learning to experience the vulnerability of going into the unknown and of trusting it. Trust it. That actually it will be okay. Trust it until you can prove it for yourself. Trust it. So that whole process is not about moving things around, changing one thing to the next thing into another thing, but allowing things to fade away in a peaceful and a skillful and a healthy way. Allow all those things to just fade away. All that you've created, all of that samsara that you've created for yourself, just allowing it to just peacefully fade and go back to its true nature, and to open up, just like that sun now, shining through, liberated, clear. That's the Dharmic way. But it's massively challenging. And it's something to ponder, something to get. You've got to get it, you've got to understand it. You've got to get how it works and how you go about it, how you pull this off, how it works. See how it works and then engage yourself with it. And discover that completely unique path, completely new, unique way of living. Take it into your daily life. So I'll offer that today for you.
Thank you. Slightly.